Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's Green Thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. See homedepot.com/delivery for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, welcome to the NASCAR NBC podcast. I'm your host, Nate Ryan, here with Jeff Burton. And as you can see, we are here in the NASCAR and NBC studios in Charlotte, North Carolina. Jeff, first podcast that we have taped in person here since, I believe, March of 2020. And I think you were the last person to do this with me live. So welcome back and thanks for being here.
Good to be back. It's good to be back in our studio doing things the way we used to do them.
It is good. It is very nice. So big day for the NASCAR and NBC podcast post-race edition. We're going to talk some Talladega. It was a big weekend for the Burton family of South Boston, Virginia. I'm going to get to that eventually. I know Jeff was at Talladega, so we're going to talk about that. But Jeff, I want to talk first about Brad Keselowski. Gets his first Super Speedway win in 3.5 years at Talladega Super Speedway. I was stunned. It had been since October 2017 since Keselowski had won at Talladega. 6 straight races at this track without a top 10, including 5 outside the top 15. And he talked a lot about this afterward, about how it coincided with a lot of rules changes that NASCAR has made in recent years that kind of changed the racing. Let's just start with, it seems as if the rules over the last year have made it a little bit easier, certainly, for guys to get runs. We saw that a lot at Talladega and Daytona the last couple of years. Your thoughts on Brad Keselowski returning to his winning form at Super Speedway Racing? And is it just a sense of, like, you know, partly just the package has changed and it's back in his sweet spot?
So I think that Brad's really an analytical guy, and I think he thinks about stuff. I think he's almost overthinking it. I think it's, you know, with, you know, Daytona and Talladega, you can go into the race and do everything the same way you did the year before and have a completely different result. And that's unlike almost everywhere else. So I do think packages matter. I think that teams have more speed with one package than the other. I think drivers understand one package more than the other. But when I think about Penske and I think about Brad Keselowski, I think they can adjust to anything. So, I was doing my fantasy league, right? And I'm like, I got to pick Keselowski. Like, he's in there. And I got to pick Denny Hamlin. Like, he's right? And then I started thinking, I'm like, wait a minute, Denny's been the guy. Do I really want to pick Brad?
Yeah.
And it just shows you how, you know, what have you done for me lately, right?
Yeah.
I mean, 6 wins at Talladega, and I was discounting him because he hadn't won recently. But I think his approach to Super Speedway racing is right. I think his aggression level is right. And on Sunday, I also think he was aided by, and I know it's difficult to say this when we saw a car flip upside down and we saw the wreck on the front straightaway, but I think we had less wrecks than we've been having with this package.
Hmm.
It almost felt like a little bit of an old school race at Talladega. It didn't have that same sense of, oh, we're getting these huge runs. I think the drivers adjusted. And we saw less wrecks because the drivers adjusted, had more experience with this package. And I know Joey wasn't excited about the package and was clear about it, but as it relates to Brad, I think all the drivers have adjusted better. There weren't as many mistakes. And I think Brad's just really, really smart. He's very calculative, and I think he just, you know, got himself in the right spot at the right time, and who should be surprised?
That's interesting, that your point there, that he might be overthinking or overanalyzing, because you're right, he is a very analytical guy. But I was stunned, Jeff. I did Sirius last Thursday, and Mike Bagley threw that stat out there about 6 straight races at Talladega without a top 10 for Keselowski. Like you said, when I think of who's the best, I think him, Hamlin, Logano. That's it.
And how many of those are wrecks?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? It's not like they didn't have top 10 speed, and that's my point. You know, so it's hard for me not to relate things to myself, you know, because I was a driver. And I can tell you 1 year, and I don't know the exact average, but I think I went 1 year where I averaged, it was just below a sixth place finish on all four plate races.
Yeah.
Right. And the next year I did everything the same and my average was in the 30s.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really easy to say, "Ooh, that boy, he knew how to drive that year before." And then last year he got really bad at it. Right. Some of it's just wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, and that's what's interesting to me, because when I wanted to ask you about that. When I think back on covering almost 20 years of super speedway racing at Talladega and NASCAR, I think of it as just one long, continuous thing. But yet, when Keselowski talked about it yesterday, he was like, "Yeah, man, like I had the rules figured out in 2009, 2010, and then they changed in 12 and 13, and I was really good like 14 and 15, and they changed in 16, and I got kind of bad there for a while, and then I didn't win until, man," like it was almost like he was a golfer remembering like every hole that he had played during the course of a tournament. And to me, it's just one long, like, "Hey, it's Talladega. There's a big wreck. There's a lot of drafting. Like, sometimes they run single file. And yes, sometimes I guess the rules were different a little bit the last few years. We had that bubble that they talked about. Maybe if you were the leader, you could control the lines a little bit more. But, you know, your take, I'm interested in, like, did it change that much when you were a driver? Or did it just seem like it was the same every year?
It's the mindset. And the reason I won one plate race in retrospect, the reason I only won one is because I viewed it as a race of chance. I viewed it as, I'm going to get in this line, and I didn't understand. It wasn't that I didn't care. I didn't recognize that I could control more than I thought I could. I put it up to circumstance. I put it up to luck. I put it up to all these things. And as I got toward the end of my career, I went, "You know, Jeff, you might have been wrong about this all along." And I started looking and thinking about it. And when you hear Brad talk about that, what he's saying is that I didn't do well. Right, he's not saying the package wasn't good. He's saying and that's the difference. You know, Dale Jr., Dale Earnhardt, Brad Keselowski, those guys go into those races thinking, "I can control this. Like I have, yes, there's parts out of my control, but the things I can't control, I'm going to control them." And that's a different mindset than, "Hey, we're all going to run in a pack, and I might get through it, I might not." It's a completely different mindset. And in my opinion, the best at it. There's a reason that people win those races over and over and over. And it's real easy to say, "Well, they got the best cars. Clearly they have fast cars." But they've studied and they've paid attention and they've looked at it as an opportunity, not as a race of chance. And I think when Brad's talking about, you know, I wasn't good here, the rules changed there, I didn't adapt, that's what he's doing. He's looking at it. And I heard Coleman Presley talking last night on XM Radio, NASCAR XM Radio. I heard him talking about how much time they spend together, how much time they spend studying, watching tape, understanding. That's effort, right? Yeah. And when you take talent, effort, all that stuff, desire, you put all that together, you typically get results.
And Coleman Presley is the spotter, and Keselowski gave him a lot of credit after that race. He's been a spotter for a few years. And that's interesting the way you position that, Jeff, because as much as we talk about, "Oh, it's a lottery, oh, it's random, oh, it's arbitrary," you're right. Like, there are these guys, and it's not luck. They have skill sets, they have preparation, who always finish toward the front and always seem to win. So if we could have taken like 2010 to 2013 era Jeff Burton, and like put you in the late 90s, early 2000s, do you think you could have won maybe a race or two at Dega?
I'd had a better chance.
Now, just mindset.
Wow. Just a mindset change. Now, I would have had to drag. My mindset wouldn't have just affected me. It would have affected others in the company. And I think that's important too.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we did need faster cars. I mean, I won a race at Daytona, and we had a really fast car. I mean, it was really fast. And I had some fast cars when I was at Childress. But if my mindset would have been, this is four races that I can control, that I'm going to take ownership in, then I would have been pushing everybody around me to be better too, right? And so the engine guys were working hard, but were they working as hard as they needed to be? Was I working as hard as I needed to be, right? We thought we were for the mindset that we had. Now, listen, I've been in conversation with many, many crew chiefs, many owners, many team members. "Well, you know, we're probably going to wreck the thing anyway, and they're all going to run the same speed once they get in the draft. Do we really want to put the emphasis on this when, you know, there's this many other races?" Like, that's a real conversation. But the very best at it, make it a point of emphasis.
Interesting. So, as I said, Brad Keselowski wins. Only led one lap, as we've seen often at Talladega and Daytona. Sometimes it's only leading the right lap, which is always the last one in this case. And unfortunately, it came in the expense of Matt DiBenedetto, who was leading entering the white flag, ends up finishing fifth, makes a move that, I don't know if you had this thought too, Jeff, but when I saw this move, I immediately flashed back to Kenseth in the 2016 Daytona 500, where he's leading. Hamlin goes up high with Harvick. Yeah. Yeah. Hamlin wins this race. Hamlin goes up high, his teammate, and Kenseth like wildly swings up to block him, which is the natural thing because you're in the lead and you're trying to fend guys off. But if he would have stayed where he was, might have been all right. It seemed like the same thing happened this time with DiBenedetto. He's got Keselowski behind him. Keselowski's getting the push from McDowell. But then Logano sees Blaney, his quasi-teammate, in the upper lane, and he swings to the outside, and that was it.
Well, if you think about it, the Xfinity race was one similar as well. Jeb was in that inside lane, and there were several people that were trying to block lanes, went to the back. And it's easy to say retrospect, you know, that what DiBenedetto would have been better off doing was looking in the mirror and saying, okay, I think this is the best lane, and just going to that lane and trying to be the guy leading that lane. Now, they aren't just going to ride behind you, right? Right? We see a lot of races where they do just ride behind you and push you to the wind. It's because you can't make a move. But with this package, you can make a move. So I have a hard time faulting Matty D for trying to be aggressive to win the race, trying to block both lanes. I have a hard time faulting him on that because it's kind of what we've been taught. You know, it's history has proven itself. There are times it's counterproductive. The Matt Kenseth, you know, that was such a block. I mean, that was in the corner, from the bottom up to the top, and like that wasn't going to work. But Matt, if you ask Matt, he would tell you, well, they were going to go by me anyway, right? So and I'm sure Matty D would say the same thing. Is look, if I didn't do something, they were going to pass me anyway. That lane was going so fast. I don't know. It's really easy to go back in retrospect and look at it and say, well, I'd have done this. Well, in the heat of the moment, you have a decision to make. It ultimately ended up being the wrong decision.
Yeah.
But if I'm his crew chief, I'm sitting down today and I'm analyzing, when should we block? Is it the right time to block? And I think that's really the analysis that all the drivers are going to have to start taking, because the blocks this weekend weren't effective. It didn't win the race in either race. So what, you know, going forward, what is the best thing to do in that position?
Whereas the blocks, say, I think, again, it was like maybe the 2018-19 time frame, that was kind of how you ran these super speedway races, right? You controlled the line by blocking.
Yeah, and there was no big run. See, to me, that's like, so, and I know we're a confusing issue, but in the Xfinity race, those cars don't get runs the way the Cup cars
right.
do.
Right.
And the cup cars get major runs. So 3 years ago, if Matty D moves up and gets that line and they push him, it loses energy on that bottom line, and there's not this huge momentum that gets gained, and that may have been the right move. But with that package, to me, it's just so hard. And I was getting ready to say it's a crapshoot, and I just sat here and told you that the driver can't have a mindset as a crapshoot. They got to go back and decide. And you got to make a decision. It didn't work. But that doesn't mean it's always going to work. And you have to have some help. So it's unreasonable to think that a driver can be sitting in his car, right, and can see the whole picture, like mirror, right? And here's all the people in this line. Here's all the people in that line. This line has the most energy. They're forming up three wide behind him. That means that those two lines are going to be worse. Like, the spotter's got to be involved in that too. And it's not easy. But if you go back and watch all of that, the chaos behind what was going on when he made that move hurt him as much as his move. Because the inside line was clean, formed up, tidy, nice and straight. The other two lines started doing this. That took energy away from those two lines. It took some energy away from the bottom too, but it took more energy away from those two lines, and it created a scenario where he didn't have this big push. Because that push gets formed five or six car lengths behind. And when you're too wide and Dyson, it just drags that energy back. So he lost that energy from that top line because it was something he wasn't controlling. He has to have help making that decision. And I think if he would have had a bird's eye view and he could have seen what was going on behind him, he wouldn't have made that move. And again, this is, I get to replay it 10 times and I'd have done that, right? Yeah. And that's, he had to make the decision like that. Boom, make a decision. It ultimately was wrong one. But you don't get to analyze. It's a quick decision.
This is the quintessential armchair quarterback type situation. These plate races where, like you said, you can watch those overhead cameras and have the benefit of hindsight and realize, oh yeah, he could have done this, this, and this. But in the moment, It's so different, and I'm glad you brought it.
And the pressure on Matty D.
Because he doesn't have a job next year.
He has to win.
He has to win.
And I don't know, you know, every driver is in a different situation, and I think Matty D is, I don't care what anybody says, when you're always driving for your life, that's difficult. You know, he's been public. He doesn't know what's going to happen next year, right? I think that adds to the intensity level. It has to. Yeah. How could it not?
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought up the spotter, Jeff, because interesting comments from DiBenedetto in the post-race. Matty D said that his spotter, Doug Campbell, he said, I put a lot of trust in him. He called me to go to the top on that final lap because he saw Ryan Blaney coming. And to your point, DiBenedetto said, I can only see so much, but I saw Ryan with a run, so I went up there to pick that up. So he made that move essentially because his spotter told him. And is that just the devil's bargain that drivers just sort of have to live with in super speedway racing? That sometimes, as you said, they don't know what's going on around them and they just have to put implicit trust in that guy above telling them where they should be.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, you have to, if you listen to the best and you watch the best drive, they are listening to their spotter. And the spotter isn't driving the car. And there's times I feel like Joey Logano's spotter is driving his car. I think Joey has so much faith that there's times I feel like that. But that puts a lot of pressure on the spotter, too. And he's under, you know, he's like, oh, my God, we're going to win. We got a lap to go. We got to do it. You know, yeah. We're at home and we care because we're fans, right? We're excited. But it's their life. And those moments are made not only analytically but emotionally. And when you're sitting there and you're up front, you've been up front a lot, you see this line coming, we got to block that line, right? That's what immediately you're thinking. I think a crew chief spotter driver that's won 8, 9, 10 races, they have a little different mindset. Everything slows down. Everything, you know, gets calmer. It gets slower. You hear about basketball players, football players saying, in my second year, things slowed down. Well, what does that mean? The fact that the players didn't get slower. The understanding of what I need to do became more clear. And when it's chaos, it's hard to think. And when you're trying to get that first win, when you're trying to make something happen, everything seems, I don't want to say worse, but everything seems more intense.
Sure, it's magnified. And yep. To try to take emotion out of that when, like right. You said, like his entire life is dependent on racing, and he doesn't know what's going to happen next year.
Yep.
And oh, by the way, too, the Wood brothers are trying to win their 100th race and have been trying for,
it feels like
a few years. Like, there's a lot of things here, like, all kind of...
And listen, the whole garage wants to win every race, but the whole garage would be excited for the Wood brothers to win that 100th race. It would be a big deal.
Be very cool. Would have been cool if it would have happened yesterday, but it didn't. Another big moment, you mentioned Joey Logano's name. Unfortunately, he got upside down in a crash during the race and got a little bit upset about it.
I guess I don't know exactly what to think. You know, it's a product of this racing. And on one hand, I'm so proud to drive a cup car that is safe, that I can go through a crash like that and get out and speak about it. And one hand, I'm mad about being in the crash. The other hand, I'm just happy I'm alive. On the other hand, I think, when are we going to stop? Because this is dangerous, doing what we're doing. I got a roll bar in my head. You know what I mean? That's not okay. I'm one hit away from the same situation right now. There is big spoiler and these big runs, the pushing and all that. It's no one's fault, right? I mean, Denny's trying to go and 47's trying to go. It's a product of this racing. We have to fix it, though, because someone already got hurt and we're still doing it, so that's not real smart. So, but at the same time, I'm appreciative of driving a car that's this safe and appreciate what Team Penske's done for the safety of these cars as well, that I can live to talk about it and go again. So I got lucky I didn't get hit while I was in the air. So, unfortunate for our Auto Trader Mustang, but we'll go on. Won't be a good starting spot next week.
So a lot of talk, Jeff, about spoilers and liftoff speeds and all that stuff the last couple of days. What can NASCAR do to address this? We heard Scott Miller say today that they are looking at this Logano crash. What can NASCAR do? Should they do anything? What do you think?
What year did they put restrictor plates on it? I can't remember.
1988, I believe.
So if you go to 1991 and pull quotes up and insert a different name, it would say the same thing. I agree with him. It's a product of this racing. It's a product of pack racing. It's a product of, if you go back and watch that race, that wreck, the only way that wreck doesn't happen is if everybody doesn't try to pass each other. I mean, nobody intentionally did that. It's, if you go back and watch it, there was a series of events that happened that started the wreck. And the only way to prevent that is just everybody say, you know, like, we're going to be cool here. We're not going to race. And we're going to race, but not, you know, like it's the last lap. One of my fears when we all worked as hard as we did at creating the stage racing, you know, I woke up a few weeks before Daytona in the middle of the night, terrified. And what have we done? You know, we got this stage racing at restrictor plate races. Now we have three endings. You know, so I agree with what Joey's saying. I agree that not with all, I don't agree 100% with everything what Joey said, but I agree it's a product of the racing. And I agree that something must be done. What is it? I mean, we've had, you know, the closest, you know, I'm going to get hate mail, hate tweet, whatever you get in 2021. But the closest thing to getting away from pack racing was tandem. And everybody hated that. It looked horrible. The only way to fix it is to separate the cars. The only way to separate the cars is to make them drive really, really, really bad, and handling comes into play, and then the cars are going to be separated, and the fans aren't going to like that race. Mm-hmm. How do you fix it? We opened Pandora's box. You know, when restrictor plates got put in the car in the late 80s, Pandora's box got open. How do you close it?
You can't just knock the banking down at Talladega and say, oh, it's going to be a flat 2.66-mile racetrack. You could, but...
But, you
that's
know, fans aren't going to like that.
No.
And I honestly think you could take every bit of the spoiler off the cars. I think you could cut the quarter panels off of them. I think you could do a lot of stuff to make them drive really, really bad. And that would separate the pack. And they'd maybe draft like hell down the straightaways, but get to the corners and they'd spread out. That's the only way to fix it.
Yep.
But I just don't know how we get there from here. Yeah. I honestly don't know how we get there from here. I think that the fan base just would revolt.
You mentioned stage racing. That was introduced in 2017, and it does seem as if there have been a lot of wrecks at Daytona and Talladega at the end of stages. We saw it again yesterday, that Logano wreck right at the end of stage one and then at the end of stage two, and then the last stage begins and they're all single file for 30, 40 laps, not by coincidence, I think.
No.
Does it surprise you that, what are we, five seasons into stage racing, that they're still wrecking at the end of stages at super speedway races? Probably not.
So what surprises me is that, you know, I think that it looks like to me everybody races really hard to try to get in that top 10 in points. And then if they're not, they like, all right, I'm out. That's what it looks like to me. It looks like people have adjusted. If they know they're not going to be in there, like they've adjusted and said, okay, I'm just going to let those guys go. I see a lot of people do that. But the buildup, and I was there. I was there sitting in the grandstands, which I love doing. It's fun. I just like sitting in the grandstands. I like to hear it, see it, smell it. You could see it. You could feel it.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't even have to look at – I looked up one time, and I'm like, we've got to be coming to a stage end, right? And I look at the big screen, and sure enough, we're like 10 away from the stage end, and I'm like, you didn't even have to look at the lap board. You could see it. You know, it matters. It shows you how much points matter. You know, when people say points don't matter, just watch a plate race and watch what happens at the end of these stages. It's pretty clear how much they matter.
Interesting opinion, I thought, from William Byron.
I still think the teams are, you know, getting the cars too fast a little bit. I think we could go slower and still put on a good race. I mean, maybe 3-4 mile an hour. So I don't know how they would go about that. But no, I feel like this package is really good. I feel like it's one of the best speedway packages we've had in a while. You know, I wasn't a huge fan of when I came into Cup, we had the big bubble effect and guys could just control the lanes and basically control the race for the whole time. That to me was just boring. So I feel like now we've got the ability to, you know, push through that bubble. Obviously, it's all about your push and, you know, having a car that can manage the push. So there's a lot of work and effort still that goes into making sure your car can take pushes and be the pusher, all those things. There's still a lot of technical stuff. But yeah, I feel like they could still, you know, slow the cars down 2-3 mile an hour and be fine. You know, I think the teams, they made that incremental step to slow them down, and all the teams quickly got that back. So I feel like, you know, it's no big deal if we were running 195 around here instead of, you know, 199.
And he thinks like the best thing to do would be slow the cars down 2-3 miles an hour and it'll still be fine. So I don't know how NASCAR does it. You've also got next gen coming in 2022. That might change the game itself, but like, do they keep the, as Dale Jr. says, the big ass spoilers? I think I can say big ass spoilers because he said it. Do they keep those and just reduce the speed somehow a little bit, or, you know, can they do it that way? Or?
The big ass spoilers aren't going anywhere for this year. I just can't imagine they would. I think that Well, the scary thing about that wreck is why did the car go airborne so quickly?
Yeah.
You know, the analysis of that needs to happen. Like the car, you know, why did it go airborne? Like they've got to find a way to keep the car on the ground. If the car stays on the ground, it's not that big of a deal. When it does get in the air, and it's not, you know, it's a combination of contact and aero, right, that sometimes causes cars to get in the air. It's not always just they turn around and, you know, they fly off by themselves. That roll cage structure has to be built so that it can tolerate it. And, I mean, I have no doubt, none, that NASCAR is working exceptionally hard to figure out how to make that happen better. But when you take a vehicle that weighs over 3,000 pounds and you drop it on its roof, there's going to be some kind of crush there that happens. It has to be at an acceptable level.
Yeah.
And I mean, the truth is that Joey didn't get hurt. He wasn't contacted by another car, thank goodness. But the truth is Joey didn't get hurt. And if he would have made contact, would he have been in a worse position? Yes. Does effort need to be put in to make it better? 100%. But it did its job. Could it do it better? That's what NASCAR has to look at, and they have to decide that it can be done better. And that's the difference today, is that, you know, in the past, NASCAR looked at things as if, you know, well, you're a race car driver, you signed up for it. I'm talking a long time ago, you know. But today, it's not like that. Today is, we're going to make it better, and they will. Like, I think they'll look very hard into figuring out how to make that car where it will not crush as easily, will not move as easily, keep that roll cage structure as strong as it can. They've added more bars, but at some point, you know, something else has to happen, right? So that those front A-post bars, they stay rigid. It's a very difficult thing if you think about it. You know, you got a windshield, right? And so the bar that runs from the frame rail to the windshield, it has to change angles. So it goes up, it bends, and now you got a bar sitting there with a bend in it. So, you know, if you take something like this and try to push it down, it's a lot easier to do than if you're like this trying to push that down, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That crushability is there. How do you support this so it can't crush, and then the driver still be able to get out of the car, driver still be able to see, right? It's a complicated issue. I know they're working on it. I know they'll work on it even harder now, keeping the car on the ground and keeping the car from crushing as easily. It's not an easy fix.
No, it's not. But you're right. They're proactive. They have been over the last 20 years. And I can remember when the Car Tomorrow came out and it had the wing. And then suddenly it seemed like there were a lot more airborne crashes happening when cars turned around and that wing seemed to improve liftoff speed. They got rid of the wing. They put the spoiler on. Any thoughts on that? I mean, you were around when that COT was in place and they had that wing. I mean, are there things they can look at in terms of liftoff that they
There's always things to look at. But, I mean, the roof flaps are huge now.
Yeah.
They've got evacuation vents in the hood. There's a lot of things going on now that are better than they were then. And the car still had liftoff. And so, I heard Scott Miller talk about that I think the Penske engineers, they're going to involve them. I always think that's a great idea. I think the brightest minds in the sport, and this is nothing against NASCAR at all, but the people that are being paid to go make their cars faster than the other people, there's a competitive nature about that creates this intensity. Involving them is, you know, John Probst with NASCAR, Scott Miller with NASCAR, all those guys are really, really smart. But there's more smart people, right? Because the teams have so much staffing. Involving the teams, which they do anyway, but involving the teams is a good idea.
NASCAR is always going to be outnumbered when it comes to engineers. I mean, they'll never have 40 teams with like God knows how many engineers. NASCAR is always going to have a limited number.
Yeah, and they shouldn't have that many. Like they are a governor. You know, they shouldn't. They shouldn't have more than the teams do collectively.
Yeah, no question. So as you mentioned, Jeff, big weekend for your family, and you had that bird's eye view at Talladega Super Speedway, way up in the grandstands to be able to watch Saturday's Xfinity race and Sunday's Cup race. Jeb Burton gets his first Xfinity Series victory Saturday, and you were there. I'm sure it was a big day.
It was a big day. It was, you know, Jeb's worked really hard. Everybody works hard in this sport, right? And everybody works hard in this sport, and they just do. If anybody that's trying to do this is working hard. Jeb's been well chronicled. You know, he was out of the sport for a while, in and out of the sport. you know, drove a very underfunded cup car to stay in the sport. Didn't know he was going to have an opportunity to have a full-time ride this year. That worked out. Got the win. I mean, that's a great story. I mean, even if it wasn't personal to me, you know, even if it wasn't personal, it's still a great story. And it's kind of a testament to perseverance, right? You got to keep going. If you care about something, don't give up. Keep fighting. It may not work out for you, but if it doesn't, at least you can lay your head down at night saying, you know what, I gave it my all. And, you know, Jeb's worked very hard to try to find funding for race cars, to bring sponsors into the sport. He's done a really nice job of bringing sponsors into the sport that have contributed to the overall well-being of the sport. You know, he's done a nice job of that. It's good to see him win. It's good to see, you know, Colic has done a really nice job. You know, they've become the team to beat at Daytona and Talladega. They just have. They've become the team to beat. And they win another one. You know what I mean? They won a lot of these things. They win another one. And, you know, it's a cool story.
And as you mentioned, Jeb has hustled to get that funding, to get that sponsorship, to get in that ride with Colic. And it reminds me a little bit of when you and Ward were coming up, you guys had that perseverance as well and never give up. And we're just going to keep fighting until we get a foothold in this thing. Has Jeb come to you for any advice? Have you offered him any guidance on that?
Yeah, we've talked a lot. Jeb and I have talked a lot. And you know, we spent a lot of time together. We spent a lot of time together the year he drove that cup car, you know, and he'd come to hang out in the motorhome, and that was really hard on him. That was really hard on him. And you know, I know what his dad went through. His dad knows we both know things other people don't know.
and never will in some cases.
Right, and I get a glimpse of, you know, behind the scenes of what Jeb's doing and see how hard he works. And Ward gets a glimpse behind the scenes of what Harrison's doing and how hard he works. And it's a good thing right now. I mean, we our family's in a good place as far as all that, and you know, my wife and Harrison's girlfriend were with Brandy when Harrison won, and they were as excited as Brandy was that Jeb won.
That's cool.
And it was just a good day. Good day. And that's four Burtons winners in the national. I mean, that's crazy, man. We're everywhere. So I heard
that.
Cool. Somebody said that today. I didn't know that.
I didn't even thought about that. That's right. So all winners in the Xfinity.
That's a somebody said that was a record. Like there'd never been four family members winning the national series. So
South Boston's raising the flag today for the Burton family. And you know, as you mentioned, you know, Harrison Burton running the full-time Xfinity series. So of course he was racing Saturday, but racing Sunday for the first time in the Cup race at Talladega. Finished 20th, said he learned a lot, said he got emotional right before the start of the race, which was unusual for him, as he said. Ran in the front pack, I think, at times. Didn't crash. What's Dad's report card for Harrison on his first Cup race?
So he went into the race saying, I'm not going to cause a wreck. You know, I'm a guest in this series. If people come run Xfinity Series full time, I want them to respect me. Dale Jarrett and I talked about that on the show last week, and Harrison had that same mindset. He said, "I'm not going to cause this wreck," you know, and he learned a lot. He got some lessons. On that last restart, he was sitting there lined up eighth.
Wow.
And two spotters got together and formulated a plan. Harrison executed on the plan, and the guy behind him didn't. And there he was sitting there all by himself.
Yeah.
And you know, Harrison's like, "What?" And I said, that's the difference between Cup and Xfinity. Like, over here, right? And I know it's competitive in Xfinity, but over here, they will steal from you. They will. It's cutthroat, man.
Yeah. You knew cutthroat.
Yeah. Yes. And like, don't even be mad at the guy.
Yep.
Because it's how it is. Like, don't be mad at the guy. Understand that's what it is. And he's like, yeah, but we had a plan. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Like, right? And so
don't be mad at him because you'll probably have to do the
same
thing.
You're gonna do the same thing one day. Right? So don't trust anybody. I mean, I'm sorry, it's just how it is. And when you sign to go cup racing, your mentality has to change.
Yeah.
And it is cutthroat. I mean, you're literally taking food off people's tables. And it's a whole nother world. And he got to look at that. And honestly, that was the point of the race. Like, so I think that when you have a developing driver or anything in life and you're trying to go through experiences, what's the goal? And for Harrison to have the goal of, well, I'm going to win a race, is asinine. Mm-hmm. The goal for what should be, I want to go do these things, and when it's over, be able to have an experience that makes me better. That's what a 20-year-old in his first cup race should be thinking. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not what Brad Keselowski should be thinking, but that's what a 20-year-old in his first race should be thinking. So, mission accomplished. He did some really good things, and he did some things that weren't as good. And that's the goal. Now he has a bucket, right? He has a bucket that he can pull things out of and say, well, I remember that, I remember this. Those experiences create responses. And when I say that, when you drive a race car, or you have to make quick decisions in whatever you do, it becomes a game of instinct. But instinct doesn't come without experience, right? Your instinct changes as you have experience. And you know, it just does. It does in nature, right? And so having those experiences create an opportunity for you to make the right decision in the millisecond that you have to make it. And until you have those experiences, it's hard to do that.
Yeah, no question. And it's funny because you're right. Like, we were on this very set a week ago, Motor Mouse, Harrison joined, and he was teasing you about saying, well, you got to be cautiously aggressive, and you can't wreck, but you can't let them take stuff from you. You got to be, you know, you got to get out there and assert yourself. So it's good that he sounds like he passed the test. I'm not asking you to break any news here, but he's in his second full Xfinity season. Made the playoffs. He won last year. Do you feel like yesterday was a good step toward maybe eventually making that,
you know, next lump up? I don't know what, I mean, honestly, I don't know what Harrison's doing next year. I really don't. Yeah. I know as little about what Harrison is doing next year as I have at any point in his career. And some of that is because he's his own man. And some of that is because we just don't know. You know?
Yeah.
And I think that those things will start unfolding. I think they'll unfold earlier this year for all drivers. I think those things are going to start unfolding sooner. There's a lot of uncertainty in the sport right now. And I think people are going to want to be the first to something, right? I think they're going to want to try to make something happen. So I think we're going to see things happen earlier this year than we historically see them. Oh, I shouldn't say historically, than we've seen them in recent years.
Yeah.
I can remember, like, if you went to Charlotte in May, and you didn't really understand what you were doing next year, you were in trouble.
Yeah.
It's turned into the October Charlotte race. I think things are going to, people are still not going to know what they're doing in October, yeah, but I think more people will know in October this year than they did last year.
So it remains to be seen, but I mean, if Cup is in his future, I would think yesterday was a really good check mark of saying, hey, I got this,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, I would think so. I think there's a lot of people trying to go to Cup next year. I think that there's, you know, this new car has spurred a lot of interest in young drivers, and it should be interesting to see how all of it shakes out.
One more for you. I want to wrap up with talking about the next race, Kansas Speedway. It's been four races since NASCAR was at a mile and a half speedway. It feels like it's been an eternity. The last time was Atlanta Motor Speedway, where Ryan Blaney beat Kyle Larson, and Kevin Harvick shocked everybody by just not seeming Kevin Harvick-like at all for Atlanta. So I'll ask you, 5 weeks later, how do you size up Cup Series going back to Kansas? Do you think we'll see some steps from Stewart Haas Racing in the number four?
Oh, you know, as Stewart Haas goes, there's been enough time for them to make some major changes. I think that they believe this race is very important because they have had a lot of time from the last mile and a half. They've got to find a way to find some speed. And I say they've got to, they know that, but can they? I mean, you know, you listen to Ronnie Childress when he told me, you know, he talked about being, you know, 70 off,
yeah,
on downforce from where
huge
they were last year. I don't know where that comes from. I don't know how you get that back.
And not in 5 weeks even, oh, right?
I don't know.
Tall order. Yeah.
And you get it back in different ways than you had it before, and that changes things as well. So even if they find a way to get some of that back, you know, you're still going to have to make adjustment around other things, because I know numbers are numbers, but where you generate downforce, I can tell you from experience, even though in the wind tunnel it says it's the same, it drives different. And every engineer would, you know, that doesn't make any sense, right? The wheel loads are the same, and it makes the same amount of downforce no matter where it's coming from. It's going to drive the same. That's not right. There are things that you can do to create the same downforce, but it drives differently. So if they can find that downforce, then they're going to have to find the right package that works with it. And they got no practice to do it. So, you know, it's an uphill battle. I mean, it's a major uphill battle, but I think this is a big weekend for him.
Big weekend for you as well. I'm glad it was a good weekend for you and your family. And,
no wrecks.
No wrecks. I'm glad that we could have this discussion. Thanks for being here, man.
Thank you, man.
We appreciate NASCAR and NBC analyst Jeff Burton for joining the NASCAR and NBC podcast to talk about Sunday's race at Talladega Super Speedway. Rather appropriate, given Jeff is so analytical in explaining driver thought processes. He always has been an authority on safety, and it was also a big weekend for his son Harrison and his nephew Jeb, so many thanks to Jeff for being our guest. Thanks as well to NBC Sports producers Aaron Feldstein and Emily Conboy for helping with the coordination and recording of this podcast. As you heard, we did this in person at the NASCAR NBC studio in Charlotte for the first time this year, and Aaron and Emily were both instrumental in making that happen and getting me the audio, so thanks as always to both of them for their hard work. And I should add here that, as with nearly all our podcast episodes this year, this episode was simulcast, in a sense, on camera, and you can check out the video version of this podcast on the Motorsports on NBC YouTube page. There were some instances in which Burton was using hand gestures, so if you want to see those, go to the Motorsports on NBC YouTube channel, subscribe while you're there. There's tons of great video content that posts daily in that spot, including full replays of NASCAR America Motormouth's shows on Peacock, which have been great lately. So go to the Motorsports and NBC YouTube channel, check out this podcast, and subscribe for more great NBC Sports Motorsports content. The NASCAR and NBC podcast is available wherever you download podcasts. Please leave us a rating and review to help spread the word. And any feedback, you can send it to me on Twitter, @NateRyan is my handle. Thanks again for listening to the NASCAR and NBC podcast.